Game on 2FM. Weekdays from 7.
And you're very welcome to Game On here on 2FM. It's Hugh Cal with you until 8 o'clock tonight. We have Donal Lenihan on the rugby, Bernard Flynn on Gaelic Games, and Eamon Dunphy on the football. All looking back on the weekend that was, and plenty to talk about as well. 51552 is our text number at Game On 2FM. If you want to get us on Twitter, we'd love to hear from you. And I'm joined in studio by Alan Cawley, Gary Murphy and Bernard Flynn. You're all very welcome, lads.
Even Hugh.
Yeah, it's been a good weekend overall. Before we start, Bernard, you were down watching the under-20s on Friday night in Donnybrook.
I was.
What did you think?
I'm still not the better of it, actually. Jeez, the collisions.
Really?
I'm not kidding you, lads. I came in, said to Gary when I came in there, I was actually picking my own young lad up from hospital. He was after concussion, would you believe, the night before he was in hospital. So that was a nice place to bring him.
I'd say it was a bit of a thinker, all right.
I actually did not believe that these guys, under 20s, are so big. Just in the collisions and the hits. And you're so close to it. It's actually brilliant there in Donnybrook now, the pitch, the new surface. Mm. Great crowd and atmosphere. But to be up so close to these guys and the hits and the collisions and the intensity and the ferocity, there was goose pimples on the back of my neck. It was incredible.
Well, I'd go one further than that. I was down there today to watch a schools match, which is 17-year-old kids playing rugby. Right. And I said to Gary when I came in, I said, you would not believe the size of some of these lads. And I'm used to watching that kind of a game. There was a guy who was playing in the Michaels loose head prop, Kelleher is the name. He's a monster. Like, he's 6'3", but he's as wide as he is tall. And he's 17 years of age.
But you know what, I mean, there's two or three off at cuts and you know, one of the little scrum half got man of the match. He was superb for Ireland. And he went down, I mean, he got a savage belt. He was straight back up. But the physical specimens that these guys are, so young, particularly the Welsh, that's what they beat the Irish, a little bit more powerful. But I was up literally only a few feet away from some of them. They're giants. And it's just, it's starting so young. What we're seeing on Sunday and the hits and the belts, brilliant game yesterday. But where will it stop, the collisions and the hits and the, to the extent of it? Because it's and I'm a GA man, as they say, my experience is starting so young and so early. These guys are at what they're at 14, 15, 16, and that's why it is heading the way it is.
And obviously the Lee Keegan incident last weekend for Mayo kind of brought it into a GAA focus as well, and the reaction of the doctors to that incident was quite something. What do you think of it?
Yeah, the physical specimens that they're becoming as well, the GAA fellas, with the amount of training they're doing, Hugh. But I fear for the rugby lads, I really do. I said this to you during the Rugby World Cup, just with the amount of games they have, the period of time in the transitions between the games. Obviously next week for Ireland there's only 6 days recovery time. You're looking at them yesterday, it was like a battlefield.
It was.
And like, all you can do is admire the courage and the bravery of them. But in some regards, like, who's kind of on the outside of all this saying, hold on a minute, lads, this isn't right. The hits that these boys are taking week after week, they're just so big now, and it's frightening. I'm looking at Johnny Sexton. I know he's probably the obvious example in terms of the hits and the concussion and the debate around him at the moment. He looked like a broken man coming off the pitch.
I was out on Friday night with Bernard Jackman because it was over in Paris for the France-Italy game, and we went out on Friday night to have a beer. We walked into a pub, and lo and behold, who was sitting there? Only Matthew Bastereau, right? Now, I've seen this guy play loads of times. To see him there, he's wearing a small black t-shirt that literally looked like, you know, my five-year-old should be wearing. He was bursting out of this thing. His arms are bigger than my torso. Like, the guy is a monster. And then people say, how did Johnny Sexton suffer those concussions with this lad running at him at full pace with a forearm to the head?
There you go.
He's a monster.
It's and like, I'm looking at Jamie Roberts yesterday and the size of him and the pace that he's running, even 65th minute, 70 minute trying to break lines, and the pace he's running at. And as you say, all you can do is admire the lads because they were so brave yesterday, and I thought they were really good.
Did you, Gary, you were at the match. Did you see Keith Earls, the hit he was putting in yesterday? And he would have been the smallest lad in the field, I'd say.
Because Jamie Roberts came down, it was late in the second half, and Earls just wrapped himself around him, and it was incredible. His too brave almost.
Yeah.
You know, and then he
now he's going to miss this weekend because
it looks
of it.
Like he's got a suspected concussion, but it's, and you can see the difference with Trimble on the other side. Like, he's that much bigger and stronger. When he walloped into Alwyn Jones, I think it was.
Yeah.
He can take it because he's that much bigger. But then it's kind of back to the point now. Years ago, traditionally, we had the wingers were kind of the skinny, fast guys.
Mm.
But they can't be nowadays now because they're going to get slaughtered.
There's actually no differentiation between the build of the forwards and the backs nearly.
So you're going to have 14, 15-year-olds trying, you know, to get, as as Bernard was saying, they're going to have to be as big as possible to even protect
they
themselves.
Have no chance.
Have
no
like
chance
that's my recollection of rugby growing up as a young fella, Hugh. Yeah. Is no disrespect to the but there was fat fatties
and the fast lads.
Small, stumpy little lads and like that. But you look at them now, there's no differentiation between any of them on the pitch.
But do you know, there's one actual massive, massive point that people actually, the neutral mightn't actually see until you're there. And as a sports fanatic, I mean, I have to admire it. I know you're Alan, you're sort of worried about the hits and that, but from purely sporting spectacle and with savage admiration, the bravery, people don't realise, the absolute unbelievable bravery of rugby players by their nature. I mean, they're incredible. If you look at
thanks very much, I appreciate it.
There's no doubt.
No, you're right.
The bravery is just insane. I actually love it. I like it, but it's borderline on suicidal.
If you had to do it all again, might you have given the rugby a bit of a consideration?
I played actually with
I think it'd be right up your alley, to be honest with you.
No, listen, I enjoyed it, but my size, you definitely wouldn't exist. I don't think, as Gary was saying, but it's just, I do think yesterday's game, the rugby, I loved it. I thought it was absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, I loved the game.
I'm sorry,
as well.
If we don't have one or two falling with blood pumping out of them, we're not happy either, you know.
Yeah. But I just find with the games now, Hugh, it's all too frequent. Fellas lying around, doctors checking their heads, checking their necks. Like, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't remember 10 years ago being like that.
Well, we're going to talk to Donal Lennon, who does remember 10 years ago, in just a minute or two. Stay with us. We also obviously have GAA to come after the weekend that was in the Allianz Football League, and Eamon Dunphy on football. Are Leicester City going to win the title? And what about £77 to go and see Liverpool play at Anfield? All that to come. 51552, let us know what you think. But if you missed anything from the weekend, we got you covered.
So it's going to be driven across, it would appear. No, it's going to be curled into the near post. Takes a flick, it's in! It's in! Leicester City have taken the lead. Robert Huth was right in there in the six-yard box. And it's Leicester City through Conte, playing it towards Mahrez. Mahrez writes the challenge of Otamendi. Mahrez, brilliant turn. Mahrez shoots. Oh, goal! That was magnificent from Leicester. They're 2-0 up. Christian Fuchs take this corner. Good whip on it. And it's headed. Oh, it's in! Huth has scored!
And now it's important to think about Arsenal. Arsenal is another amazing team. But we are ready. We are ready to fight also there. Why not? Why not? We have to try.
The lads are buzzing now down the dressing room. Now, listen, we're realistic. You wouldn't want to get carried away. But for us, it's a massive thing. Do you know what I mean? Because we looked at Division 1 and it was all about trying to perform and be able to compete. And I suppose in our first two games, you know, we have competed well.
Pleased we won, number one. That's the most important thing every day you go out. But pleased with the performance and the attitude of the lads overall. You know, I thought they started the game really, really well. And then obviously Cork came back into it.
Martial back to Mata. Mata to the left side. Borthwick Jackson plays the ball in. It's teed up. Oh, what a great goal! Fantastic strike by Lingard.
Willian. Now to Hazard, turns away nicely on the edge of the D, but he's got his back to the penalty area. And now through into the area, Costa, clear chance, sliding block, Costa again, and he scores! And it is the equaliser!
I feel like my game's good, you know, I finished nicely, which is going to give me a bit of momentum. 13th last week, decent top 10 this week, and, you know, kick on, and you never know, next Sunday where I could be standing.
Back with Conor Murray, sees it back towards Jack McGrath. McGrath goes forward. That one, it takes three Welsh fellas to stop him. Presents it for Conor Murray, goes for the line himself. Conor Murray for the try on the near side of the pitch. Gareth Davies for Wales are again putting under pressure and available here now for Faletos. Faletos goes forward and rolls over the Irish defence and touches it down. It's a try for Wales.
Here's Rhys Priestland now with the penalty to put Wales into the lead with 7 minutes and 50 seconds remaining, and he comes up and he drills this one, kicks it towards the post, and Rhys Priestland's kick is gone between the posts. Wales into the lead, 16-13. Sexton with the penalty as Ireland attack the Havelock Square end of the ground. He's thumped this one towards the post. Sexton's kick has gone straight between the posts. It's as if he doubted himself, but there was no need, was there?
Yeah, that was the weekend that was in sport in 2 minutes and 28 seconds. Couple of texts in before I go to Donal. Rugby players may now be bigger and stronger, but the vast majority of games are now poor quality. Just look what has happened in the French team since they adopted the physical approach. This will just lead to many more serious concussions and shorter careers, says Owen. On the subject of big hits, this is interesting from John Gannon and Clontarf. On the subject of big hits in rugby, maybe a body mass index limit is a solution, i.e. if you're a certain height, you can only be a certain weight. That is interesting, and it's something we might talk about maybe a little bit later on during the week. Well, Colley and Cal, would you still have Ringrose ahead of Payne after yesterday? Payne was excellent in both defence and attack yesterday, and Ringrose has a bit to go yet. Yesterday showed how badly Payne was missed during the World Cup, says Barry in the West. Yeah, I still think Jared Payne, his best position is fullback, and if he had started at fullback yesterday, he could have put maybe Simon Zebo on the wing, Stuart McCluskey in there, and even put Ringrose on the bench. But that's maybe a conversation for another day. But thanks for the text. There's more to come as well. But Donal Lennon did drop into studio earlier this afternoon. And first thing I said to him was, how's the form?
Yeah, great, Hugh. Great weekend.
Yeah, I'm just kind of curious to know your thoughts. I've read a lot about the match today, but you were there at the Aviva Stadium. And I'm wondering, have you had time to think about it 24 hours later? What did you make of the Ireland performance?
I thought it was an outstanding performance. You know, we spoke during the week, all the injuries they had. The longer term injuries are fine. Players are aware of it. You come into camp, the likes of Mike Ross, Peter Omani and Henderson, they're not part of the setup, so you take that as read. So to lose somebody like Sean O'Brien and Rob Kearney by Wednesday, I think would have sort of put the players on the back foot a little bit. But the reaction and the response right from the kickoff, I thought, was absolutely incredible. I thought Joe Schmidt has so much to be proud of the performance. I thought there was great variety in terms of the approach. There was definitely, we know what that Welsh blitz defence is like. Same setup, same operation, all under Sean Edwards now, yeah. I think, for 7 or 8 years. But Ireland were finding holes in that Welsh defence that were never there before. Five clean line breaks, some great lines of running from Jared Payne, from Simon Zebo, Keith Earls. The defence in the outside channels was an area that I think Ireland would have been worried about, given what happened against Argentina. But there was just two or three incredible reads from Keith Earls twice, and Andrew Trimble made two try-saving tackles.
Yeah.
Just the whole package, I thought, was incredible. And to be fair to Wales, 13 points down, held Ireland scoreless for 47 minutes, yet Ireland came back into it again. So, you know, a draw, is it leaves you with an empty feeling, and definitely looking at the players, the immediate response from both sets of players was one of huge disappointment. But I think when they sit back, I think Wales...
Did they underestimate Ireland, do you think, Wales?
Certainly, I think they weren't as fast out of the blocks as Ireland were. It's interesting, actually, in the build-up to the game, RTE had David James from Wales, Shane Horgan, I think, interviewed him with Eddie O'Sullivan,
yeah.
And they were behind
I heard that.
The goal. And David James said, look, he said, I'm worried, I'm looking at the Welsh players, they just don't seem to be at the pitch that I think they need to be. I remember writing a note at the time, and you do sense these things. It's one thing when you're down on the sideline, you know, when you've been involved in sport at that level, you know when players just aren't at that pitch.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no question that Ireland, emotionally, were at the pitch of international rugby much faster than Wales were, and that was definitely a factor in getting the two penalties, the 6 points. I mean, they sprang out of the blocks.
Yeah.
The first penalty, there were 17 phases in the build-up to that. The second penalty, 15 phases in the build-up to that. Normally, against that blitz defence, you don't get the opportunity to build that sort of momentum. So I thought it was a fantastic performance. And I think so much to build on. And I think in the longer term, given that you have to go into a competition of this nature without so many key players, it has to benefit you, given that you're adding strength and depth to your panel.
Okay, just to play devil's advocate then for a minute, should Ireland have won the game? I mean, should they be disappointed that they didn't hang on to that 13-point lead?
Yeah, I think they will be disappointed. But look, in every game of this level, there's going to be periods when the opposition are on top. And you look at the level of experience that Welsh side had. You look at the bench that they were able to introduce. The likes of Bradley Davis, Gethin Jenkins made big impacts. So from that point of view, I think Wales were always going to come back into the game. They seemed to change their approach a little bit in that last 20 minutes, and that Jamie Roberts became way more direct and put a lot more pressure on Ireland's inside defence. But yeah, look, when you're 13 points up in any game, you're bound to be disappointed, you know, when you let it slip. But 13 points isn't a huge margin in the modern game.
Less than two tries, converted tries.
Yeah, I mean, so like, if you're not more than two scores ahead in rugby, there's always a question that you're going to be caught. Because the quality of the place kicking. Now, I know you were in Paris on Saturday, the place kicking in that game, up to the time that Plisson came in, was shocking. But you look, to be fair to Rhys Priestland, given that he hasn't been starting for Bath because George Ford is the 10 there, he certainly hasn't been kicking in that type of pressure environment. So taking that on board, I thought his performance kicking-wise was excellent. And Johnny Sexton got 4 out of 4. And to be fair to Sexton, the one that he had to nail to draw the match, having taken a massive hit again only 2 minutes earlier, as we all know, he had to come off immediately after that penalty. I mean, I thought that showed character, courage, everything really that epitomised the Ireland performance on the day.
CJ Stander got the Man of the Match award, obviously, and I thought he was phenomenal for the entire game. And I was thinking to myself, you know, when Sean O'Brien comes back in, when Peter O'Mahony comes back in, and all of a sudden we have four or five fit options for three positions, on form he's the last guy that you consider dropping at the moment.
Yeah, and to be fair, I thought Jamie Heaslip was outstanding as well. The whole back row as a collective, Tommy O'Donnell, brilliant. But you need that. I mean, back row forwards is always the place, the positions on the field where there's the highest attrition level. So it's utopia to think that you're going to have six or seven of these guys available at any one point in time. So you need that strength and depth. The thing that made Stander's performance so impressive for me was the point I made earlier with Paul O'Connell gone, losing O'Brien, who for me is that talismanic figure in the dressing room before you go out, losing him put even more onus on Stander to deliver. He was now the main ball carrier with O'Brien gone. And because of that, to perform to the level that he did, especially in the opening 20-25 minutes, when you're supposedly finding your feet, when you're supposedly the pace at international level is higher, it's more intense than what you've been used to. This was his first outing. Like, at least he'll be in a so much better position when he goes to Paris next week. And as you say, that prospect of having Stander and O'Brien in the same back row, I think, offers huge options, and I think even releases Jamie Heaslip to have the type of influence on the game that he had yesterday. So all potters. The other guy I think we should mention in terms of carrying is Jack McGrath. I mean, he was superb, both in terms of his tackle count and in terms of carrying. So in the modern game, you can't have an over-reliance on one or two players in terms of carrying. And I think Ireland now, like Stander, certainly has given us another option of that.
Something that stood out for me that I really wasn't expecting, and no, I suppose, disrespect to him, but, you know, since Paul O'Connell has stepped out of the Irish team, it was this question mark over the engine room, the second row, and Mike McCarthy came in, but I thought Devon Toner really stood up and was counted yesterday.
No question, I thought he was absolutely outstanding. But that's the way it is. I mean, I saw fellas come and go over the years in international rugby. I saw great players retire, but Ireland never go out with 14, you know. Somebody steps up to the mantle. It's the same. Look, Brian O'Driscoll, what a loss he was when he went 2 years ago. In comes Robbie Henshaw. Henshaw has been sensational. You know, I've said it here before. He was had a superb World Cup, and he's just growing in authority. The exact same with Devon Toner. Sometimes when you're in the shadow of a great player like O'Connell, you're almost afraid to express yourself because you feel you've got to sit back a bit and do what you're told almost. He's offering the leadership. O'Connell I'm talking about was the one who was calling the lineouts. So in effect, you're standing back, you're listening to what's happening as opposed to taking control and taking ownership of the lineout. Toner called it. I thought he was superb. He cut the line when he needed to. He called a lot of ball on himself when Ireland were under pressure. And in fact, he carried quite well and made one great break out of defence. So overall, I'm with you totally. I thought he really had an outstanding game. And Mike McCarthy, to be fair, a good workmanlike performance for him, given that he hadn't been on that stage for over a year and a half.
Okay, so we have to turn our attention to France and Paris this weekend. It's a 6-day turnaround, and we'll come back to that in just a second. But you were in studio for the Paris game, and I was there to watch the French do what they haven't done in a long, long time. Now, I suppose the point being made by Bernard Jackman beside me was that, look, they made an awful lot of mistakes, and they did. But if that game plan clicks, France can be very dangerous.
There's no question about that. It's certainly from an attacking perspective, this is the best I've seen of France in a long time. They did seem to have a bit of structure, despite the fact that Novaes isn't credited with being an overly technical coach. But I thought they had that. Where I'd be critical of France on Saturday was their application without the ball was a disgrace.
Okay.
I mean, there was no intensity, there was no effort. It was almost as if it was acceptable to sort of wander back into the defensive line. And if they do that against the likes of Ireland, England or Wales, then they'll be cut to shreds. I agree that in terms of an attacking perspective, if this was the France of old, and in Vakataki they have a fellow out there, and you could see, obviously, they have one game plan. Get it to him early and often. Yeah. Get it to him as much times. The more times he touches the ball, the more is going to happen. And I thought Dante, in an attacking sense, offered a huge amount. Again, I know he was caught defensively at times.
Would you start Marmoz then this weekend? If you were, you know,
I thought he made a huge difference when he came in.
Yeah.
He's that bit more experienced than Fiku. And given that Dante was only getting his first cap, I think that would be a wise selection from Novaes. I also think that Marmoz, I know he's struggling to get on the team in Toulon now because Nanu has gone in there and Bastereau is there. But you can see he understands defensive structure and organisation, and because he's a more experienced player, he, I thought, made a big change, whether it was tactically he was put in there to make that change or he just had that influence on the people around him. We'll have to wait and see, but I wouldn't be surprised if he was selected next weekend.
Okay, here's a big sticking point for a lot of people, okay, and there are two sides to this issue. France, as we saw on Saturday, are now playing this almost kamikaze, ridiculous type of offloading game where they'll do it no matter what the situation in front of them. Ireland won't do it at all. And again, they did not do it against Wales, and perhaps people are saying they could have scored more tries if they had tried it. Where do you stand on this? Do you think that, you know, obviously, as impressive as they were yesterday with the injuries they had, that Ireland were full value for the possession and territory that they had? Or do you think that actually they still need to develop more in terms of their attacking play?
Well, I think they do, but I think they took a step in the right direction yesterday. Like that first phase of play, in the opening 5 or 10 minutes, they had more weight on their game. They had fellas holding defenders on the inside. There was fellas running good lines. I mean, there's a number of ways to break down defences. Offloading to me is a mindset. It's something that comes naturally, certainly to the Southern Hemisphere players. You saw young Argentine forwards in the World Cup who had the skill set to do that, but that's because they're doing it week in, week out. All those young fellas in Argentina were sent off to South Africa to play in the Currie Cup with the Jaguars, with a young side. They didn't bother playing under-20 rugby or junior World Cups.
Yeah.
They were sent there for a specific reason. But that is a skill set that is built up over time. To be fair, in the provinces, it isn't as if Munster and Leinster or Ulster are all offloading every Saturday.
So you can't
just click a finger and say, okay, no, lads, we're going, because you have to be confident that the support on your inside and on your outside, this diamond where you have a player who's deep, one on the left, one on the right.
Yeah.
But that's committing three players within a 5 metre area of the ball carrier. And Joe Schmidt, his view is he wants to protect possession, recycle quickly. The biggest difference for me yesterday was Ireland's ability to recycle the ball far quicker than we've seen in a while. And that is the key, because they do have pace. I know Zeebo, there was a lot of chinks in his game, but in an attacking sense, he nearly got away on two or three occasions. I can see why Joe Schmidt, and we're all suggesting, you know, should Jarrod Payne be full back? Should they make change? Should they bring in McCluskey? But Jarrod Payne is like the wise old head in the middle of young Henshaw on one side. I thought he played a very smart, intelligent game yesterday. And look, I always say, you've a coach like Joe Schmidt. He's hands-on with these players 5 days a week. He's looking at what's happening in training. He's in a far better position to judge what's the best he can get out of those players in the positions that he wants. We can give a view, we can give an opinion, but Joe Schmidt, for me, you look at that performance over the weekend, and you know he's had huge highs with Leinster and Ireland in particular. I thought, from a coaching perspective, it was one of the best performances that I've seen from Ireland. Mm. Also, bear in mind that he was taking on the role of defence coach,
yeah.
And Ireland's defence was certainly vastly improved on the last outing in Argentina. So it just shows how versatile a rugby mind he is.
Just finally, then I have to mention England because it was Eddie Jones' first game in charge, and it seemed to me. I managed to watch most of it after the game, that Scotland were just undone by England's sheer physicality. Scotland were game for the first 40 minutes, but they were just zapped of energy.
And that's what England could do to you. I mean, they're a huge side, but then you have the likes of Makuvunipola coming off the bench. Courtney Laws is a magnificent athlete, these type of players. And to be fair to Jones, I think, you know, he wasn't overly complimentary of Johnny Lacey in terms of... but he made a tactical adjustment during the game. Certainly, England, I thought, again, they had two lines of attack when in possession, one flat, one deep. I thought the final forward access worked very well. The likes of Anthony Watson and Joseph have brilliant feet, so if they get a bit of space, they can be lethal. But he just felt that the way the game was refereed, it gave the advantage to the defence. They tightened up their game. They went back to what the core of English rugby, solid set piece, great maul, drive through the tackle. We saw Billy Vunipola left on for 80 minutes and they did the damage. For Scotland, I was expecting more. Same old from Scotland. They get to a certain point, but they can't get over the line. And they have this inability. When the pressure is on, they make too many mistakes and make a lot of poor decisions. So despite... you know, how well they did in the World Cup. Yeah. I think that was a really sucker blow for them over the weekend.
Donald, thanks many for your time as always.
Cheers, Hugh.
Casey McCroom thinks Donald's in two places at the one time. He's obviously on Against the Hedge. I did say he popped into his studio this afternoon. I wasn't trying to pull the wool over your eyes, but fair play to you, Casey, for the text. Pity the national anthem could not be heard on TV, nor the atmosphere in the stadium. Great anthems unheard, says another text. What about the great win for the women's team? Yeah, we're hoping to get one of the players on during the week. I'm going to be in Perpignan on Saturday night to commentate for RTE Television and their second game against France, so... brilliant start against Wales. Very comfortable victory for them. And it is something we're going to come back to. Lads, the game was there to be won, but we didn't. The Welsh didn't perform. There are a few more along that vein that actually Ireland blew it. Gary, a quick shout out for Larry and another top finish in the PGA. Surely now at 21 in the world rankings, it'll be the Rory and Shane show in Rio, says David in Cork.
Undoubtedly, it's been a great start for Larry. He's played three events and he won the Eurasia Cup. He finished 13th last week in...
Torrey Pines.
Yeah.
And sixth, and he's won $625,000 already this year.
Not bad for three tournaments.
Yeah, it never happened to me, unfortunately. But the funny thing is, like 2 years ago, and it just shows how, you know, when you get that opportunity to ride the wave that you have to. 2 years ago, come the middle of May, the week before Wentworth, he'd $14,000 up for the year. So golf is a very fickle game, but he's in that vein, and it's a very fast start from considering he'd a slow end to the year. He's very, very disappointed with his last four events at the end of the race to Dubai, which really would have cemented his Ryder Cup. But it's a great start, and he's back in at AT&T this week and finished 13th there last year. So
hopefully he can keep seeing
on Hugh on the 16th was brilliant, wasn't it? Having the crack with the fans
On the par 3. Brilliant. Now I said this to Gary earlier on. It was brilliant. Yeah. And he looked so cool after. But imagine if that putt had lipped out. Would it look like some spanner with the ears up like Hulk Hogan in the WWF? And next minute the thing misses. But he took a chance.
And to be fair, the fans responded. Greg Stone cheered him after as well.
It was good. He was doing that because that was copying what Patrick Reed had done at Gleneagles. So
yeah.
He was giving his bit back, and then in his interview with Tim Barter afterwards, he was quite buoyant in mentioning the Ryder Cup. You know,
it's so a big goal for his, yeah.
Yeah, he's confident that it's going to happen, and that's half the battle. He's not afraid of the challenge.
Ask Donald about his debate on Marion Finucane's show that physicality is really violence by another name. I did hear that, actually, because I was coming back from the airport, and it wasn't Donald that mentioned violence. It was one of the other panellists. I can't remember who it was. But yeah, I did hear that. It was interesting enough. A couple of texts in saying that, you know, this is overblown in terms of we're making too much of the collisions and stuff. Charles in Dublin 12 says, Hugh, pain in the arse listening to this L1's debate about the hits every week. Why don't you wrap everyone in cotton wool and don't let children run in the play yard in case they fall? There are people who think like that.
Hugh, I said I enjoyed it.
Yeah. I enjoy it too. Absolutely. We just have to address the other side of the argument. I mean,
I'm just a little soft football fella here, so maybe that's what's wrong.
When you look at the soccer lads mauling around the ground there and whinging.
Yeah.
Look, Bernard, I enjoyed the match too. It was great, and I said I admired their bravery, but there comes a point where it's getting, I think, out of hand.
No, I think there's a fine line. I think the last thing we want to do is sanitise sport.
Sure.
At all. I think that is happening undoubtedly with kids coming up now. We are sanitising everything, and he's right that they're not allowed running the schoolyard.
Yeah.
And it is true. But if there's, we can keep the physicality in the game as long as we have measures to protect them when stuff happens. I think that's what we're trying to say, really.
Absolutely. Yeah. 100%. 5-1-5-5-2. Keep them coming in, by the way. And Gary, the great victory by Jack Hume. Brilliant, in South Africa in the open stroke play competition. Richard Ford in County Kildare. Yeah.
Fantastic. He won the South African Amateur Championship, which is brilliant. And I'm delighted for him because I didn't think he was ready to go pro at the end of last season, even though he did have a go and it didn't happen. I think another year will certainly stand to Jack. He's a huge talent, but just another year, put a little extra layer on him, and there's good things in his future.
And we're also hoping to speak to Cormac Sharvin potentially later on this week. Okay, keep your texts coming in. We're back in a second with GA.
Game on 2FM. Weekdays from 7.
Okay, you're very welcome back. Bernard Flynn is still with us in studio along with Alan and Gary and myself. 51552, if you have anything to say between now and 8 o'clock. The first thing to say is that I have to say, on a personal level, I'm delighted to see Roscommon beat Kerry over the weekend, because they were written off after losing to Monaghan and the manner in which they did. And I think they got a lot of enjoyment out of going to Kerry and coming away with a victory.
I have to confess, I watched all of this game and I recorded the rugby,
right,
believe it or not. So
okay.
I was enthralled when a senior's comment, I said, I'll stick with this and watch it. A superb win. Didn't close out the week before. You got to commend Kevin McStay and Fergal O'Donnell. They've done a great job. There's a lot of work done, more than Kerry. Kerry were very poor yesterday.
Why were they so bad, do you think?
Well, they're missing a lot of players.
Yeah, but it was still a strong enough team out there.
It was. It's the worst Kerry forward line I can remember in my time watching a big game, if you like, or a competitive game. But it doesn't take away, Hugh, if Roscommon can bottle this, what they showed yesterday,
yeah,
the character, the effort, the endeavour, but the sheer heart down there. They beat Kerry, beat them fair and square, and deserved it. And huge support down there. So it was a massive 2 points. They had to get 2 points, I think, out of four to stay up there. And, you know, with Sean Monroyan and all that's going on there behind the scenes. And they're, you know, great young bunch of players, and they have been very well looked after, great management structure in place. So I just hope to stay in Division 1, but a fantastic win, and they deserved it.
Because equally, I was thinking it would have been so easy for the heads to drop after what happened against Monaghan, you know. And
I thought it was a
credit to Kevin and Fergal that actually they got them back in the mindset to believe they can travel to Kerry and come away with a win.
But if you just look at the last 5 minutes yesterday, they completely played Kerry at their own game. They closed out the game.
Yeah.
They went down, a few injuries. They actually got a little bit schmozzing near the end to gain a minute and a half. It was brilliant. Yeah. So they learned from the week before, which is great to see.
Because I'm looking at this Kerry team, you know, the likes of Griffin, Enright there, Murphy, Aidan O'Mahony, Killian Young, Dave Moran, Johnny Buckley, Tommy Walsh, you know, Declan O'Sullivan. There's some serious players there.
Some serious players. If you look, Enda Smith there, a guy who plays at DCU, was superb. He got man of the match, 3 points from play. Cottle Craig, 4 points from play from Roscommon. They ran at them. They had skill. They had heart. They had great pace about them. But talking about earlier on the bravery with the rugby, the bravery of the Roscommon players in dreadful, dreadful conditions.
Yeah.
It was appalling conditions. And I have to say, over the 2 weeks of the league, we haven't had worse Irish weather for Gaelic football.
It's been unbelievable.
I think the effort from the players has been superb over the last 2 weekends. It really has. Full credit to Roscommon. But listen, we're not going to sympathy for Kerry down in their own back.
No way. And equally, you know, Eamon Fitzmaurice didn't look happy yesterday. I have to say that. I know it's only 2 games in. He did not look happy.
I was just going to say it, actually. If you watch near the end of the game, he was shouting and remonstrating with players.
You don't see that.
I've never seen that.
No.
Never. And he was not happy, because the one mistake they've made, in my opinion, over the last number of years, you can't flick the switch on and off league and championship. Look at Jim Gavin's going for his fourth league in a row.
No coincidence there.
It's no coincidence. Mickey Hartley's going well with Tyrone, winning 3 All-Irelands 2003, 5 and 8. They were doing really well in all the leagues. You have to carry one into the other. That's why, look at Donegal this year. Brilliant yesterday. 5.29 in 2 games. You see a different attitude. They must do well. Gallagher knows that. And I think that's where Kerry have fallen down.
Yeah, and equally then, Cork fans must be scratching their head going, hang on a sec, we absolutely annihilated Mayo the previous week. We went out yesterday, and as one of the lads in the office, the boss man who was from Cork, he says to me, it must have been the jet lag from the bus trip up from Cork to Donegal.
No, it's just Cork being Cork, with all due respect.
It's infuriating, though, if you're a Cork fan to watch that.
Yeah, I'd say there was none there, to tell you the truth, up in Donegal. Absolutely yeah. not. They just don't travel. I mean, honestly, I watched that game as well. I watched three games, yeah. two Gaelic and one rugby yesterday. I watched. I couldn't believe it was the same team that played Mayo. I mean, yeah. they were so poor. But that's just the Jekyll and Hyde, the fickleness of Cork. If you want it, that game yesterday sums up Cork and Kerry. People wonder the difference. By and large, the difference in the two teams down in Munster mentally. Cork are fickle, they're brittle. I played against a very good Cork team. We played in three All-Ireland finals against them. But since then, the weakness, the players they put through their hands, the talent, the sheer talent, and the ability, and it just never comes through. It's all mental, and yesterday showed exactly the weaknesses that exist, and that's the biggest challenge to the new manager.
And equally, Gallagher and Donegal now. I mean, like, you know, it's been two very good performances, albeit Down didn't turn up the first time, but like, you can only play what's in front of you. And Donegal look really good this year. There's something clicking with them that maybe was missing a bit last year.
I think they look, there's an enthusiasm, a freshness about them. By yeah. all accounts, he hasn't killed them or flogged them. They've rested well. I think Murphy took one of his biggest and longest breaks, and well deserved, 3 or 4 months off. He's never than that. I think there's a huge energy about them. They've found a few new players, Hugh.
Yeah.
Look at Young McHugh at half forward, Thompson yeah. there, brilliant there.
McNeilish was brilliant as well.
McNeilish won 4 from play. McBrearty's getting stronger. And I think, you know, young Ryan McHugh and fellas like that, with the old guard and McGee's and that there as well. These guys will have a big, big say. And if you look at 5.29 in two games, it's and amazing. They dismantled and destroyed Cork. Massive, massive rain check for the Cork management. But brilliant for Donegal. I think the champion needs a good Donegal team, and we've seen that yesterday. Very well done.
I mean, just you mentioned Cork, they went on from that high of giving Mayo a good beating to having now a points difference of -9 after two games, just on the basis of losing to Donegal. You mentioned that, you know, Gallagher isn't flogging those lads, and I wonder, can the same be said for Armagh and Kieran McGinney? Because I'm hearing reports that actually training is so intense there, but Armagh are just looking very flat on that pitch. They're beaten by Laois.
I think it's the overall, you know, even the support. We've lost it the last few years in Meath, you know, the disconnect. Armagh supporters love the Gaelic football, the team, the whole lot, and the pride and the passion. Things have changed and times have changed. McGinney was immense. He was a brilliant captain, a superb player. I just don't know. At the moment, it doesn't seem to be working genuinely. I mean that with respect. And whether there's a lot of players who are not meant to be playing or don't want to play. Jamie Clark is heading off abroad again. Mm. You wonder why. But definitely Armagh should not be propping up Division 2 the way they are, and some of the games I've seen them in, they've been very, very poor. So it's big question marks, big challenge, and he's a man under pressure. You put your neck on the block, you got to deliver or else you'd be walking. That's it.
Yeah, okay, then a quick word about Mayo and Dublin. I mean, we were looking for a reaction, right? I suppose Stephen Ratcher was looking for a reaction, and the Mayo fans, based on the lack of performance that was there in the previous weekend, did they get anything? Well,
they were so bad the week before, you had to get a reaction. There's no doubt about it. They did get a reaction. I thought Dublin were very beatable. Dublin forwards were extremely poor. One Dublin forward scored a point from play, Connolly. That's all for the whole match. Dublin were there for the taking, but they closed out the game. They were never really in trouble to control it. Mayo got a big reaction, a big improvement. Still had a worrying signs. They just, the old Mayo again in the second half, they got chances, couldn't take them. O'Shea, Doherty and guys.
The free taking is a problem as well when Killeen's not there.
I did a note earlier on, they missed 3 or 4 bad frees yeah. there. He's a big, big player for them, missed him. But they just were very poor in front of goal in the second half. But Dublin did what they did. I thought Dublin were very, very good in the second half. They controlled the game well and were probably 3 or 4 points a better team. 11,000 on a night you wouldn't put dogs out in. And I have to say, you commend those two sets of players. Conditions were atrocious. I thought it offered up a bit like the game of television yesterday with Kerry and Roscommon. With the conditions, Gaelic football as a field sport is not conducive to those sort of conditions. It was a superb game and superb effort, but Mayo coming up short just once again. Rochford is in a bit of trouble, I mean, unless he gets a few players back.
Yeah, and I have some tough fixtures coming up as well. I just have to ask you before we leave it about Meath, because we've had a text in earlier which is just gone from the screen now, but basically somebody wondering, you know, what are the problems with Meath GAA at the moment? I said to you last week that, you know, they were obviously looking pretty good early on in the season. You weren't getting too carried away, and now they go to Fermanagh and they just can't break them down.
I did tread with a caution this fairness last week, I have to say. You know, I could see it nearly coming a little. It has, you know, a little bit of Cork yesterday. The inconsistency we've shown at times, like get 1 point from play in 74 minutes yesterday up against Fermanagh, who by all accounts were not particularly great themselves. Poor display. Cavan in 3 weeks' time at home, it's a must win. But it's just that consistency. We need to get a bit more of that. It must infuriate Mick O'Dowd. He was extremely critical of the players today in the
lack of intensity.
Yeah, which it hasn't been like him, and particularly the forwards he blamed. But overall, as a unit, we just need guys to buy into what Meath is about and the type of game we're trying to play a little bit more than we have. It's all right being good in one game, but you can't be so poor the next game. And I do think we're not ready for Division 1. If we consolidate Division 2, we'll be very, very happy. But an awful lot of work to do.
OK, stay with us, if you don't mind. Eamon Dunphy's on the line. Hi, Eamon.
Hi, you.
It's great to talk to you. Myself and Alan were talking earlier on about Liverpool and what's been going on there vis-a-vis the ticket prices and the fans walking out in the 77th minute when they were 2-0 up against Sunderland. We know what happened next. But
yeah.
I think the problem, you know, that they are protesting against cuts into the heart of football at the moment. Alan's not impressed at all. I'm just wondering what your view is. £77 for a ticket being proposed for Anfield next season. I find that incredible.
Yeah, it is. It's wrong. And the American owners are to blame. Don't forget, all the Premier League clubs are going to be getting something like £300 million next year plus, depending where they finish in the league. And that's a great opportunity to lower prices for fans. And to, you know, encourage people who love the game to come and see the games. So it's a shocking indictment of the Fenway Group, who own Liverpool, but they're not on their own. I mean, Arsenal have very high ticket prices. They all do. And the more money they get, the wealthier they become. They squander a lot of it in the transfer market and on agents and players and wages and stuff. Never think of their own fans. And I think Liverpool is the greatest club, one of the greatest clubs in the world, and particularly, you know, a great club for reasons that great teams, great tragedies associated with the club, great fan base, they're wonderful people, Scousers, and that they're being treated like this is wrong, and I'm glad they've reacted like that.
Alan, you know, the point was made over the weekend, football is nothing without the fans, and the fans are seriously unhappy with the way they're being treated. And I read a few articles today, and the point is being made away that they're actually being walked over here. And the very thing that Eamon says should be happening, i.e. the club owners giving something back to the fans because of the increased revenue, the opposite is happening.
The opposite, and it's so wrong, Hugh, because, as you said, it would be absolutely nothing without the fans. And to be charging, it's a working class game, you have to remember as well. Like, people who were normal Joes, Hugh, going about their business, working all week towards, and they're so passionate about the game in England, the fans, going about their business all week, looking forward to the game, maybe bringing a kid along with them, and they're just being priced out of it, so they are. By pure greed, that's all it is. When you think the money next year that the clubs will share $8.3 billion amongst themselves with the TV money, if anything, the money should be coming down, not going up. It's the opposite. That's what's happening. And I was delighted to see the protest on Saturday, and hopefully more of them take place until these owners and until these people get the message, because it's just wrong.
Because, you know, I suppose in any walk of life, Eamon, if you increase the price for something, you better be able to stand over the product that you're offering. And, you know, Liverpool fans at the moment are going week in, week out to see a team that's underperforming, a bunch of overpaid players who were signed really against the better judgment of the previous manager, and now they're asking fans to pay more money to go and see those players?
Yeah, I mean, it's very easy to show this up for what it is. It costs £12 to watch Bayern Munich.
£12
to watch Liverpool.
Sums up. The German model is unbelievable. You only have to look at the Bundesliga game, and every week stadiums packed, cheap tickets, looking after their fans. It was the same when Bayern Munich played Arsenal last year, and the chairman said he'd pay for all the tickets for the away fans.
Yeah,
it just goes to show you.
And then you look at Leicester City, Eamon, and I read your piece in the Star today, and all the factors at work making them the force they are and the top table, top side in the Premier League table at the moment. And I just think it's Leicester, for me, could be the saving grace of the Premier League if they win this, because it shows that the overpaid superstars actually aren't the answer to success.
No, I mean, Leicester cost $22 million, the whole team. Raheem Sterling cost $60 million. Go figure. So, end of story. You know, it's actually, they have shown up, the big clubs, who are mostly, if not exclusively, run by people who you wouldn't really want to be running your local chip shop.
Yeah.
But they're dealing in hundreds of millions, making massive deals. They don't know what they're doing. They're out of their head. The coaches have no real control. And it's a continual soap opera. But Leicester have exposed that in a big way. I think it's one of the greatest stories of all time.
Yeah.
Because it shows what ordinary, good pros, but a number of them on free transfers, a fellow like Danny Drinkwater from Manchester United, £1 million, talking about playing for England now. But Christian Fuchs, the left back, free transfer from Schalke. Mark Albrighton, who I remember, we all remember playing for Villa.
Villa, yeah.
Free transfer. Wes Morgan, £10.5 million from Notts Forest. Casper Schmeichel, £1.25 million. And the whole thing amounted in salary esteem to £22.5 million. And they'd be earning accordingly. I think Vardy's on £40,000 a week, and he's going to get an upgrade to something like 70. Yaya is on £250 a week after tax, it is reported. And we saw head-to-head Drinkwater and Yaya on Saturday, and there was only one winner, and it wasn't the guy on £250,000 a week.
Yeah.
They're brilliant. It's a fantastic story.
Do you remember the film Moneyball? Brad Pitt was in it,
yeah.
About the baseball team in Oakland who, you know, signed this guy to basically come in and pick players that were basically undervalued and basically get them for what was pittance at the time, but that they could all do a job and all operating off the same hymn sheet with the right tactics in mind and playing to their strengths, that they could actually go on a run for a season. And Leicester is a bit like that.
It is, yeah. And interestingly, their chief scout, who got some of these players like Mahrez for £400,000, they got Vardy for £1 million.
Yeah.
Arsenal have just headhunted him today.
Wow.
So I can exclusively reveal.
Wow.
Again, you. This is called journalism. No, yeah. He's been headhunted by Arsenal. It's really interesting that.
Wow.
Because I think everybody understands what was going on when these players were being signed and what were the clubs who let them go so cheaply thinking about. So it's a great story on any number of levels. And I think they're 5 points clear. They've got Arsenal at the weekend. If they get over that, they have quite a few games that you'd expect them to win. So, you know, subject to injuries being okay and not having an injury crisis, they've got a real chance now, and I think it's brilliant.
As the lad who said to me, Alan, when I was preparing to do my first bungee jump, don't look down. And I think that's what that's what Ranieri is saying to his team. Don't look down, lads. Just keep going.
Was it your last bungee jump, Hugh?
It was actually.
A brilliant quote, Hugh, at the end of the match, yeah. But what Leicester have done has been absolutely phenomenal. What I love about them, they're just relentless in their pursuit of going after basically what they believe they can win. And that's,
can they do it?
I firmly believe, looking at them Saturday, why can't they do it, Hugh? They're there on merit. It's not like it's a fluke. When everyone's been written them off, they've answered all the questions that's been posed of them. They've one of the best strikers in the league this season in Vardy. They've Mahrez, who's probably get player of the year. And then they have lads, as you've all said there, who have all their own little qualities, blending it all together. What I love about them as well, there's modern day coaches now who complicate the game, Hugh. You look at Leicester, I watched them Saturday, and there's this myth almost since the McAleely came into the position. Now, I know there's tactics and philosophies. McAleely came in as the defensive holding
midfielder, yeah.
But it was as if then that was the only thing he could do. He couldn't run forward. He couldn't go anywhere else on the pitch. He couldn't create. He was there to just sit there. You watch Drinkwater and Kante play as old-fashioned midfielders. One sits, one goes. It's all simple tactics, Hugh, but it's what we're told as you're a young fella growing up. If one goes, one sits, and the two between them, vice versa. And the two of them breaking numbers. They get into the box. They defend as a team. You watched them. There was an incident there. Drinkwater broke up play in the edge of the box. He was at the under end of the pitch about 20 seconds later winning a corner. They've been absolutely brilliant. They're so fit. What's a huge advantage for them as well is that they've no distractions with Europe or with the FA Cup or anything like that. So whereas all the other teams like City, Arsenal, they'll have all them distractions as well. So I think they can do it, and I'd love to see them go on and finish the job because they've been absolutely brilliant, Hugh.
Yeah, there's a text in earlier on for you, Eamon, and he said Leicester's great run. Nottingham Forest were promoted to Division 1 in a third place playoff in 1977. They won the league Division 1 in 1978, the European Cup in 79, and successfully retained in 1980, and probably denied the greatest Liverpool team of all time the 5 in a row European Cups.
Yeah.
While Leicester's achievements so far are fantastic, that Forest team were legends, as JP Scott.
Yeah, no, that was an amazing example of Brian Clough's genius as a coach, really, because he took some very ordinary players from other clubs. John McGovern is one that comes to mind. John Robertson, who's a very good player, actually. Martin O'Neill played in that team. But the other great example is Alf Ramsey in 1962, Ipswich Town, who are the equivalent of Leicester, if not even a smaller club. It is a smaller club, in fact. They won the then First Division, which is now the Premier League.
Yeah.
And Ramsey, of course, designed that team. It was full of journeymen. They won the league. He went on, got the England job, and won the World Cup in 1966. So something amazing is happening. Whether anyone will learn lessons from it, I'm not sure, because it really is, I mean, it's a league full of egos, sometimes mental egos, splashing money around on bad players, giving money to agents, hooky deals, all sorts of stuff.
The point as well, the point as well is that, you know, somebody wrote a piece recently that said actually, if Leicester do go on and win this title, it'll be a one-off, and actually the big clubs, the Manchester United, the Man Cities, they won't allow this to happen again because it's going to cost them. It'll cost them Champions League, and they'll change the rules to hit smaller clubs like Leicester so that it won't be able to happen again.
I don't think they can do that, but it probably won't happen again. But I tell you, when Pep Guardiola goes to Manchester City, he's going to need some Panadol. When he looks at the team he's got, and the first question on the agenda when they have the he has his first meeting, who bought these players? Who spent all that money on that rubbish?
Yeah,
and Yaya be out the door, but he's got a job to do. It's really exciting that Guardiola's gone to the Premier League, because the intensity of the Premier League and the way it's played and what will be expected of him with these rogues. I mean, these guys are bandits. And he's going to have to buy a few players. And I say they've said he'll have 150 million to spend. He won't get much for 150 million.
No.
So Pep is in for a shock.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And it's very, very, it's an intriguing appointment. But he definitely, he'll need the pills to calm him down.
Absolutely. Listen, we're out of time, unfortunately, Eamon. Thanks a million for your time. We'll talk to you next week.
Pleasure. See you guys.
Cheers. Thanks a million, Eamon Dunphy there. Okay, that's about it. I've been a Liverpool fan all my life, said Senan in Sligo. Been going since 1982. I can't afford to go anymore. Fans were right to leave. I hope Leicester win the league for the good of football. On that note, we'll leave it.
Sums it all up, Hugh, yeah.
Alan, Bernard, Gary, thanks a million.
Thanks,
we'll do it all again soon. Stay tuned. Louise is on the way after the news.